Hi, I'm Jay from JinxNavigator.com, and this is my podcast. We're making our way through all of the issues of The Jinx. That was a newsletter for magicians and mentalists that lasted from 1934 to 1941. And a lot of what we do as mystery performers can be traced back to something from The Jinx. This is the podcast where we browse through every issue and find out how many of the ideas are still usable 90-some years later. Spoiler alert, the answer is just about all of them. We're looking at issue 14 today, which contains the editorial by Theodore Annemann, the Burling Hull Letter Battle by Theodore Annemann, Images of Business Cards by Annemann, A Card in Flight by Bobby Hummer, Coins en Route by Ottokar Fischer, Acute and Quick Location by Annemann, Metal versus Fabric by Fred DeMuth, and Thoughts in the Air by Ted Annemann. The editorial in issue 14 opens with Annemann making a case that most magicians would probably resist. Learn fortune-telling, he says. His argument is practical. Magicians tend to sneer at it, he says, but nothing takes over a party faster. Learn a card layout or two, learn the meanings, and let the combinations do the work. He recommends Grant's fortune-telling card trick as a starting point. He also describes a variation using a deck of giant cards. After a regular card reading, the large deck comes out as a finale. The helper turns one over and gets a personal reading, then signs the face of the card. And over time, the deck fills up with autographs from notable sitters. It sounds like a cool idea, especially if you work with notables. Selfishly, I'll point to my website, lowshoenumerology.com, where you can quickly learn to give people readings based on their birthday or any other set of numbers. Readings are not magic or mentalism, but they are adjacent, and I'll back up Annemann's remark that it's a people pleaser. In this editorial, he also picks up the thread of magic exposés, specifically Popeye cartoons, which apparently included a pretty clear demonstration of the levitation with the hoop and the sawing illusion. Annemann dismisses the usual approach of writing letters and extracting promises from publishers. He says he has a subtler strategy and will share it next issue if there's enough interest. Then there's the ongoing situation with Burling Hull and stage magic, a public dispute that's been simmering for a few issues. Annemann addresses it briefly, clarifying that his complaints have been editorial and professional, not personal. The editorial closes with what can only be described as Annemann's fantasy publicity campaign. A magician arrives in town in a coffin, escapes from jail, climbs the outside of a department store, gets blindfolded and hung upside down from a window, catches a bullet, and is eventually buried alive by the townspeople, only to be dug up on opening night. He describes the whole sequence in gleeful detail and closes with the question, "Is there another publication in all of magic that will give you such original routines for becoming famous?" There is not. Okay, we are into the Burling Hull letter battle. This is a departure from the usual format that we've seen so far. This is a letter printed in full from Burling Hull responding to criticism that Annemann had directed at Hull's publication Stage Magic in a previous issue. Hull opens by noting that Annemann claimed he would print a reply and that he's taking him up on it while also preparing 3,000 copies to go out with his own mailing. The letter is a point-by-point defense. Hull had been ill for 2 months and had notified all major dealers. He argues that Stage Magic was never advertised as a monthly magazine, but as a book issued in parts, and that subscribers have actually received considerably more than originally promised in both size and content. He runs through his publication history, cites over 1,200 testimonials, and notes that delays in ambitious magical books are hardly unprecedented, naming Hilliard's Art of Magic and several others as examples. He closes with a pointed shot at Annemann's own book, which he says nearly didn't appear at all and only made it to print through the intervention of a dealer who financed it after Annemann walked away from it. It's an aggressive letter, and the fact that Annemann printed it in full, as promised, says something about how he ran the Jinx. This next item is not something made for a podcast. It's a full page of business cards from magicians back in the day. But you can take a look at all of them at JinxNavigator.com. This next one, A Card in Flight, is from Bobby Hummer, who stopped in Waverly, New York, and shared it with Anneman in person. It's CardVantage with a surprising location and the kind of effect that requires a little advance work, but pays off in a big way. A helper notes a card in the deck. The deck goes into a borrowed hat. The performer reaches in and appears to remove the spots from the noted card one by one, flicking them away. The helper searches the deck. The card is gone. Then a window curtain is raised, and the card is on the outside of the glass looking in. So the vanish relies on a simple and clever piece of misdirection involving small pieces of black paper and a move inside the hat that happens in plain sight without anyone noticing. The card on the window is set up ahead of time, of course, using a duplicate, and Anneman describes doing this effect in a friend's home during an earlier visit that same day, planting the card on the outside of the window before dark. Card to impossible location. Full details at jinxnavigator.com. We're now at the second contribution from Otakar Fisher, and it's a coin transposition for platform or stage use called Coins en route. 10 half dollars are counted one by one onto a helper's palm, which is then covered with a handkerchief. The helper holds the corners. 10 more coins are counted onto a tray and poured into the cupped hands of a second helper. The first helper shakes the handkerchief a chosen number of times, and that many coins travel invisibly from one set of hands to the other. So Fisher's contribution is a specific handling at the start of the count that makes the whole thing work. A quiet steal built into an action that looks purely functional. And Fisher offers an alternative for those comfortable with coin work who'd prefer a more visual finish. Diachylon plaster makes another appearance here, doing its quiet work behind the scenes, but in our enlightened age, we'll use magician's wax instead. I have seen several versions of traveling cards, but this may be the first time I've heard of doing it with coins, which could be really handy if you're already doing something like the Miser's Dream. Get a bit of a coin set going in the act. Full details, you can find them at jinxnavigator.com. A cute and quick location is from Anneman, and he stumbled onto it while playing with a deck rather than setting out to invent something. A card is selected and returned to the deck. Four cards are dealt face down in a row, and the helper is asked to touch one. Whatever card they touch, its value tells to the performer how far down in the deck to count for the selected card. The setup requires four specific cards in a particular order near the top of the deck, nothing else. That's it. The handling for each of the four possible choices is slightly different, but in each case, it's clean and direct. Anneman notes he found it while just noodling around, which makes it feel like the kind of thing that could be put easily into a casual impromptu session. You can get all the details at jinxnavigator.com. This one is from Fred DeMuth, Metal versus Fabric, and it's a close-up coin effect with a clean visual premise. A dime passes through a handkerchief. Handkerchief is spread over an open palm. A dime and a penny are placed in the center. The helper gathers the cloth up around the coins and twists it tight. Then, slowly, the dime is pulled right through the fabric. When the handkerchief is opened, only the penny remains. So the method uses a classic coin set that many of us already own. DeMuth's contribution is a new application that'll make the penetration visible and direct. He closes with the note that the same effect works with shell half dollars, and that anyone with a coin set collecting dust in a drawer has a new effect waiting for him. So we just stopped minting pennies here in the U.S., and people stopped carrying handkerchiefs decades ago. Otherwise, this would be the perfect EDC effect. Seriously, though, pennies are still around, so give this one a shot. Find out everything at jinxnavigator.com. Thoughts in the Air is the last effect in issue number 14, and is from Anneman, and it's a two-person mentalism piece that he describes as something he's been using and finding genuinely practical in real-world conditions. A borrowed deck of cards, a room full of people, and an assistant. The assistant is sent out of the room, a helper is selected, apparently by chance, through a card deal, and asked to take a small personal object from their pocket or purse and hide it somewhere in the room. A second helper selects a card from the deck and returns it. The performer leaves. The assistant returns, spreads the deck and finds the chosen card, and then walks the room, locates the hidden object, and returns it to its owner. Now I mentioned that the performer leaves and then the assistant returns. They don't leave so that they're ever in the same place at once, of course. Okay, so the card selection is misdirection. What the audience remembers afterward is the hidden object being found and returned. The card element fades from memory, which Anima notes is part of what makes the whole thing so clean in retrospect. The system for communicating the object's location is built into something the performer does before leaving the room. There's a coordinate system that divides the room into progressively smaller sections. This can be set up and learned with the partner in about 5 minutes. I think I'm going to get with someone and try that at an upcoming Magic Club meeting. Full details, including a diagram of the coordinate system, can be found at jinxnavigator.com. That's it for this episode of the Jinx Navigator podcast. To see every article in every issue of the Jinx, go to jinxnavigator.com and sign up. It is completely free, so there's nothing stopping you. Use the contact form on that site. Let me know what you think of the podcast, good or bad. I'm Jay Jennings from jinxnavigator.com, and I hope you join me again next time when we explore issue number 15, which includes Animan's an original faked envelope with a publicity angle. And I thank you in advance for helping spread the word about this, the Jinx Navigator podcast. See you next week.